are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, September 6, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Today on the program, Susan Collins has a fig leaf malfunction as the Times has leaked documents that Brett Kavanaugh does not consider Roe v. Wade settled law. Meanwhile, Kavanaugh squeezed over contact with Trump's personal law firm. And the resistance claims to be in the White House. And it's also bullshit. Meanwhile, why was a pro-Russian Trump speech vetted by a Putin confidant? That's weird. Jim Mattis possibly on the outs, as Lindsey Graham's game explained. Trump and the White House to defy the courts and will try to detain child migrants longer. And remember that wall? Do you know what I'm talking about? The wall. The beautiful wall.
I recall hearing something about this.
The see-through wall. You have to have see-through because everybody's going to throw drugs over it. You want to get banged on the head with all the drugs.
Need transparency.
Yeah. Promises kept. And in this case, promises broken. Not going to get funding this year. Sorry, folks. Meanwhile, it turns out a government photographer was ordered to doctor the inauguration crowds. Government. And I will tell you why that's not as funny as it initially feels like it is.
Please.
And lastly, today in Delaware, Kerry Harris versus Tom Carper. Go out and vote. Upgrade your Democratic representation, folks.
Oh, that's a radical upgrade right there.
Big upgrade available to you if you live in Delaware. All this and more, ladies and gentlemen, on today's program. It is Thursday. We're breaking format a little bit this week because we're back on vacation and we have a very important set of hearings. Brett Kavanaugh did not have a great day yesterday. And it's getting worse for them. And part of it is, now, look, it's still very much a long shot. And the sad reality of this is that in the event that somehow, by hook or crook, it seems highly unlikely now. As, you know, frankly, I don't want to rephrase that. It seems highly unlikely as of 2.5 years ago, before Donald Trump was elected, that if we were in the situation, there'd be any way for the Democrats to stop this nominee. Right? I mean, that was, we've talked about that ad nauseum. If you did not understand that 2.5 years ago, you need to bone up on your politics and on the way that our government functions. But that aside, there is a chance. Kavanaugh has some great liabilities. I don't think this has been handled particularly well by the Republicans. There may be some who are feeling some pressure. In the event that Kavanaugh does not get confirmed, we still are facing a situation where, A, you would need the Senate to be taken by the Democrats. And then B, you would have to hope that Mitch McConnell would have would do the honorable thing and not try and push through a worse nominee.
So we're doomed
during the lame duck session.
Any scenario on his honor, we're done.
Tom Cotton.
Well, Yeah, I mean, look, much of this was written in stone, but some time ago. However, stones break. It doesn't happen often, but we've all seen a stone break, right?
Erosion.
Erosion happens. Earthquakes. Someone drops a stick of dynamite. I mean, anything can happen. It just won't necessarily. But this is, it's good. I mean, I think the Democrats are doing as good of a job at this point as you could hope. So it's somewhat encouraging. We are going to go through some of the highlights of yesterday. Of course, the hearings are ongoing today. They may or may not end by today. We just don't know. There's no set amount of time. Maybe at one point Chuck Grassley is going to say this afternoon, like, we've done 30 hours of, or tomorrow, yeah, this afternoon, we've done 30 hours of hearings, and that's 0.2% more than Elena Kagan.
That was what we demonstrated in the congressional record. Yeah. So, if you keep insulting my integrity, my feelings are going to be hurt.
That situation. However, before we get to that, this is pretty, this is sort of a blockbuster. And
for us, it's going to really make our heads explode.
Yeah, guys, if you're driving, you may want to pull over to the side of the road because we've got some data and some science here that provides a claim that I think is just really honestly is going to make your heads explode. Who better to explode your head than a professional TV psychiatrist with a PhD? I am, of course, talking about Gina Loudon. And here she is. She's considered, incidentally, one of the 100 founding members of the Tea Party movement and was a founding writer for Breitbart News. She's also a member of the Mar-a-Lago Resort in Palm Beach, which, of course, is owned by President Donald Trump. But don't let that in any way keep you from hearing the truth. Here it is, provided on the Sean Hannity program.
Yeah, Trump derangement syndrome. I mean, Sean, that's what most people have called it to this point. But my book actually uses science and real data and true psychological theory to explain why it is quite possible that this president is the most sound-minded person to ever occupy the White House.
Oh, you are just, you literally liberals' heads are going to explode at what you just said.
Right now. Oh. And that's the fun part of the madness is just watching them go crazy over the fact that he's really pretty unfazed by them. And I believe that. And I know.
And that's what drives them nuts.
And that's what drives them
Mike
crazy.
Mike McCurry.
There you go, folks.
I would definitely describe Trump as unfazed. That would be a consistent word I would use. As an example, media coverage doesn't bother him. Water off of a duck's back.
Oh, yeah.
Things that people might say about him, and I don't know, let's just randomly say CNN as an example, does not upset him.
You know what totally, completely unfazed him? Was nobody showing up at his inauguration.
Well, that's just the type of thing that because of his superior mental health, I think if we're being honest, any of us would have been a little bummed if we had a significant decrease from our predecessor.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And particularly if he was an African-American.
I mean, of course,
who I had claimed was actually not an American.
Oh, yeah.
So that would have been
super upsetting. But in Trump's case, he just goes, I got a job to do.
He took
I don't have
stride.
Time to worry
That's right.
about that.
I'm working for the American
Thank you,
people.
Dr. Gina. I'm very sound mind. I'm also sight mind and smell mind.
Dr. Gina, the therapy that she gave to Flavor Flav on VH1 in Flavor of Love.
Is that
third
right?
season. Or no, she, I'm just saying, like, this is where these people are like, Dr. Gina, like, you not only have a certificate in the mail and like Trump, you also provided a therapy for the Whack Pack
on
Howard Stern.
I was reading up on her.
2004.
Apparently, she claims that her degree was held up from, I think, the University of St. Louis because of political reasons.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything on that. I was looking at her Wikipedia trying to find her degree, and all I found is that she walked off of wife swap. When she was matched up with a polyamorous couple.
Being conservative is the best deal.
Yeah.
Being conservative is the best deal. Because, Iran, you literally have to take responsibility for
nothing.
I love the idea that she was able to make this determination just based on psychological theory.
Yeah, on psychological.
On true psychological
and
theory.
True science. Science. And that was the problem. Could you imagine her paper? The paper's like, and conclusion, liberals' heads explode.
Results. Results. The funnest parts of this madness.
Method, analysis, conclusion, liberals' heads explode.
That's like something right out of an Onion headline almost, you know, like, I'm not crazy, you are, says science.
Exactly. I actually think that scene could have been just written by someone at the Onion. Meanwhile, folks, as you know, Casper is the sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. With three mattress models, the original Casper, the Wave, the Essential, Casper perfectly designed their mattresses to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Not to mention, breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. Even in these nasty, nasty, and it's been nasty, hot in New York City, I am not sweating like I used to in my bed. And the best thing, it's delivered right to your door in a small, how do they do that size box. Free shipping, returns in the U.S. and Canada. The best part is you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's Super Famous. I've added that description of it because to me it's super famous. 100-night risk-free sleep on a trial. After all, you spend one-third of your life sleeping. You should be comfortable, folks. If you have listened to this program before and you have heard me talk about Casper, you know at this point I am up to three Caspers, two for myself, one for a another family member. That was one of the upsides, one of the upsides of rejiggering my marital status was that I was able to get another Casper mattress exclusively for me, not just for my kid.
Is that the technical term?
What's that? Rejiggering the marital status?
I would like a rejiggering.
There was a rejiggering of the marital status, and then you get what you get for that. You can buy yourself a Casper. Now, I want to make this clear. You don't have to rejigger your marital status to get another Casper. But for me, it was a huge upside. Because Saul had the only Casper in the house.
I remember that.
Yep. And I was like, as soon as I had that opportunity, I'm not going to say it's the reason why we rejiggered it, our marital thing, but it was one of the upsides. Now you can get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/majority and using majority, that code, at checkout. So it's Casper.com majority, offer code majority for $50 off your mattress purchase. Of course, terms and conditions apply. Let's jump right in to footage from, there's some really interesting clips. And, Al Franken had to go, but was anticipating Al Franken on the Judiciary Committee for hearings like this. I have to say, some of the other members on the Democratic Judiciary Committee have really stepped up. Let's start, I guess. Well, let's start with the Kamala Harris one. Now, I'm not necessarily the biggest Kamala Harris fan for reasons that we've discussed here. She was a prosecutor, and she does quite good at least interrogating a witness. And in this instance, Brett Kavanaugh seems a little bit unprepared for this line of questioning.
A little bit flummoxed.
Here she is asking the judge. Now, also be clear here. Brett Kavanaugh has not been going out. Just so you know, Brett Kavanaugh has not just been hanging out at home waiting to get appointed to a position on the Supreme Court. He has sat on the D.C. Circuit Court. This is the second most powerful court in the country. And arguably, maybe it's incorrect to refer to it as the most powerful, but a lot of cases come through here. And virtually all of the administrative cases, all of the questions about how our government should function, go through the court that he sits on. So there's a lot of reason why, even if he was never appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, he should be rather careful about who he's talking to about issues that have at least some possibility, never mind plausibility, but in this case, possibility, maybe even probability of coming in front of his court, which makes this line of questioning extremely interesting. And his inability or refusal to provide a direct answer that much more stunning. Here is Kamala Harris asking Brett Kavanaugh about any conversations he's had with specific people about Robert Mueller and the Mueller investigation.
Judge, have you ever discussed Special Counsel Mueller or his investigation with anyone?
Well, it's in the news every day.
Have you discussed it with anyone?
With other judges, I know.
Have you discussed
Pause
Mueller?
It for 1 second. All right, this is important because right now in his head, he can remember that he's talked about it with other judges. Makes total sense, right? In fact, that's probably the one set of people that you could talk to. If you were, you know, sitting on the second most important court in the country with the notion that this could come before us, judges would be exactly the people that you would want to talk to about this because you're not speaking out of class, right, in this instance. I mean, remember, you are sitting in a lifetime appointment on one of the most important federal judicial posts in the country. So you theoretically have a sense of like judicial temperament and propriety.
Have you discussed Mueller or his investigation with anyone at Cassowitz, Benson & Torres, the law firm founded by Mark Cassowitz, President Trump's personal lawyer? Be sure about your answer, sir.
Well, I'm not remembering, but if you have something you want to...
Are you certain you've not had a conversation with anyone at that law firm?
Cassowitz, Benson.
Cassowitz, Benson, and
Torres. For 1 second. Vice Principal Stevens?
I like how he's like, I'm not, but if you're trying to get me into a perjury charge, it would be cool if you could give me a heads up.
I mean, this thing where he's like trying to pronounce Kazowitz.
Marijuana?
he found a joint?
A doobie? I've never smoked a doobie before.
My house.
I mean, if you want me to answer the question about it, I need to know what it is. Because I don't know what it is you're talking about.
He really is making a face like that.
It's sort of amazing. Look at this face. All right, go back. Because this is a guy who is like, Can I use one of my friend's calls? Can I do that here? Can we just do a timeout for a second? I just need to gather myself.
Remembering, but if you have something you want to...
Specifically?
Are you certain you've not had a conversation with anyone at that law firm?
Kazowitz, Benson.
Kazowitz, Benson, and Torres, which is the law firm founded by Mark Kazowitz, who is President Trump's personal lawyer. Have you had any conversation about Robert Mueller or his investigation with anyone at that firm? Yes or no?
Well, is there a person you're talking about?
I'm asking you a very direct question. Yes or no?
Pause it. I need to know because there could have been, he could have like, I sometimes interview copy machines at various law firms. And if I, like you're talking about a person.
Wait, you're giving me directions? Because I just want to be clear that I'm being, you're directing me
human
like.
Human interpersonal communication here?
Like the way we're doing? Like it's in the Senate chamber? I just need to like,
did
know.
I mention? Did I mention that I talk to judges?
Yes or no?
Well, is there a person you're talking about?
I'm asking you a very direct question. Yes or no?
I need to know the... I'm not sure I know everyone who works at that law firm.
I don't think you need to. I think you need to know who you talked with. Who'd you talk to?
I don't think I'm not remembering, but I'm happy to... be refreshed, or if you want to tell me who you're thinking
so are
of,
you,
works.
Are you saying that with all that you remember, you have an impeccable
pause
memory?
It. Now, the reason why, now, there is, I can understand someone being somewhat sympathetic. Like, maybe this guy doesn't know. He's, you know, the answer you would give at this point, right, to be the most generous to Kavanaugh would be, to be honest, it's conceivable that I spoke to someone who works there and I was not aware that they work there. I talked to a lot of people. I could have casually said something to someone. It's possible they may work there and I would not be aware of it. So I did not knowingly speak to a person knowing that they worked at that law firm. That I can tell you for sure. But instead it's this like person... Kasowitz.
It'd be weird not to know who the person
well,
you're working
that's
for.
That's the other thing. I have never met an attorney who has talked to another attorney who didn't know what law firm they were at. Now, maybe you're a judge and you're just talking willy-nilly to people about a case that could come before you. Just willy-nilly. Talking to lawyers, you don't know where they're from, and you're saying anything, but it's very weird that he can't answer this question.
I sit in Union
and
Station.
I would also, it also leads me to believe that if he wants to see a name, then there's maybe multiple people that he spoke at that firm to.
Continue. You have an impeccable memory. You've been speaking for almost 8 hours, I think more, with this committee about all sorts of things you remember. Yeah. How can you not remember whether or not you had a conversation about Robert Mueller or his investigation with anyone at that law firm? This investigation has only been going on for so long, sir. So
right,
please
I'm not sure I
question.
Do. I'm just trying to think, do I know anyone who works at that firm? I might know.
Have you had? That's not my question. My question is, have you had a conversation with anyone at that firm about that investigation? It's a really specific question.
I would like to know the person you're thinking of, because what if there's...
I think you're thinking of someone and you don't want to tell us. Who did you have a conversation with at that
firm? I'm not going
to... Mr. Chairman, I'd like to raise an objection here. This town is really about law firms. Law firms are full of people.
First of all, I'd like you to pause the clock. Thank you.
The clock is paused.
Thank you.
Pause the clock. Let me raise my objection.
Recognized.
This town is full of law firms. Law firms are full of people. Law firms have a lot of names. There are a lot of people who work at a lot of law firms.
Yeah. Vote no. Be in the mirror. Vote no.
Nice.
Now this is Senator Mike Lee is attempting to cover for Kavanaugh, who clearly needs a break, right? And there's a protester telling the senators to be a hero and vote no.
God bless.
None of them are. But
God bless all these protesters.
Law firms abound in this town, and there are a lot of them. They're constantly metastasizing. They break off. They form new firms. They're like rabbits. They spawn new firms. There is no possible way we can expect this witness to know who populates an entire firm. That he's
answer the question. Answer the question. Answer the question. Answer the question.
My point of order, Mr. Chairman, is simply this. If there are names, if there is a list of names he can be given of the lawyers to whom she's referring, I think that's fine. But I think it's unfair to suggest that an entire law firm should be imputed into the witness's memory when he doesn't know who works at the law firm.
Now, pause it. Here's the thing. Is it again? First of all, you don't have to know everybody in a law firm to know that you've spoken to a person at a law firm. Right? Like, I can tell you people that I spoke to who go to a certain college, but I don't need to know everybody at the college.
Isn't that a little irresponsible of you to do that, though? Without knowing every single person from the janitor to the deans?
But the point is that, and Kavanaugh could certainly say, like, I've talked to a lot of lawyers about it, or I've talked to two lawyers about it. I don't know what law firm they worked at. If you tell me that they worked... But he doesn't want to say either that he spoke to someone specifically at that firm, or he doesn't want to say other people, right? Because now in his mind, he has to come up with the name of a lawyer who, with whose affiliation he doesn't know, right? You can't say, oh, well, I spoke to this lawyer about it. No, I know they're not at Kasowitz. He has to come up with... And he could just say, like, I have no recollection of speaking to someone at the law at that firm. But he must be aware that they have something.
How could you possibly speak to somebody in law and not know that about the Mueller case and not know that they're working for Trump's law firm?
That would be somewhat irresponsible for you to do as a judge, seeing as how you are one of literally 20 people in the country, maybe 21, who could end up hearing that, any part of that case.
Excuse me, point of order. That's incredibly unfair. Like, keep an open mind in case I do need to rule on something like that.
I've been discussing Mueller with you, getting inside info for 20 minutes now. By the way, which law firm do you work at?
You don't work for Trump, do you?
Oh, no. You work at Kasowitz.
Shoot.
God damn it. That black woman's going to ask me about it. I know it. The same one that humiliated Jeff Sessions.
Don't tell me your name.
Don't even tell me. I don't even want to know.
Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Whitehouse.
We have...
Are you making a point of order?
Well...
Senator Whitehouse,
I'm trying to figure out what the rules are here, because we had a very, very long discussion about whether or not points of order were in order, because this is a hearing. And we were told that all of our points of order,
Senator Whitehouse,
all the documents.
There's never been a time in the 2 days where someone's made an inquiry of the chair where the chair hasn't recognized the member for a point of inquiry or a point of order.
And I've been recognized now, and I appreciate that. But my point is that if the rule is that nobody on our side can make a point of order, then it ought not to be appropriate for Senator Lee to start making points of order after all of ours were summarily silenced on the basis that we were in a hearing and not in an executive session. If we've moved out of hearing and into executive session, then I'm more than happy to make motions.
Senator Whitehouse, if the mere fact that you're speaking right now means that you've been allowed to make a point of order, the matter that you're talking about yesterday was a motion that the chair said was out of order because it was an adjournment motion that would have required us to be in executive session. Anyone who wants to make an inquiry of the chair may do so, but we will limit it to that before we go back to Senator Harris.
Very good. That's the right result.
Sir, please answer the question.
I don't know everyone who works at that law firm, Senator.
And have you had any discussion with anyone ever about Bob Mueller and or his investigation?
Pause it. Now, what's going to be interesting in his response here is, again, that he is going to, for the third or fourth time, pull another one of these, like, people? Kasowitz? It's going to be slightly more sophisticated, but not much more sophisticated.
Not much.
Right? Like, it's almost the equivalent of him saying, like, well, I mean, I've talked to people about different Bobs in my life. Go ahead.
So you said Bob Mueller, or so have or I ever had a discussion about Bob Mueller? I used to work in the administration with Bob Mueller.
What about his investigation? Have you had a conversation with anyone about his investigation?
I'm sure I've talked to fellow judges.
Anyone
aside from fellow judges?
About Bob Mueller?
About his investigation, sir. I'll ask again.
But
I asked the question just a minute ago. I'm surprised you forgot. Have you had this conversation with anyone about the investigation that Bob Mueller is conducting regarding Russia interference with our election or any other matter?
The fact that it's ongoing, it's a topic in the news every day. I talked to fellow judges about it. It's in our, you know, it's in the courthouse in the District of Columbia. So
and
I guess the answer to that is yes. So the answer is yes.
Okay. And did you talk with anyone at Cassowitz, Benson, and Torres?
You asked me that. I need to know who works there.
I think you can answer the question without me giving you a list of all employees of that law firm.
Well, actually, I can't.
Why not?
Because I don't know who works there.
So that's the only way you would know who you spoke with? I want to understand your response to my question, because it's a very direct one. Did you speak with anyone at that law firm about the Mueller investigation? It's a very direct question.
Right. I'd be surprised, but I don't know anyone. I don't know if the I don't know everyone who works at that law firm. So I just want to be careful, because your question was and or. So I want to be very literal.
That's fine. I'll ask a more direct question if that's helpful to you. Did you speak with anyone at that law firm about Bob Mueller's investigation?
I'm not remembering anything like that, but I want to know a roster of people, and I want to know more.
So you're not denying that you spoke with
him? Well, I said I don't remember anything like that.
Okay. I'll move on. Okay. Clearly, you're not going to answer the question.
I mean,
I think now we're finally reaching a point of agreement, Senator.
It's sort of weird that it takes him 8 minutes to say, not that I remember. Right? Like, he didn't say anything other than not that I remember. And that seems to me to be something that you could say very early in that exchange, unless you realize, like, I've got no other option here. And he had a lot of time to think about that. Mike Lee gave him a lot of time. And those protesters, God bless their heart, gave him a little bit more time to, like, gather, presumably turn to his counsel, any of the white supremacists sitting around him. Yeah. I joke. And ask him, like, how should I handle
Stop
this?
Texting 4chan memes Come to on. Each other. God damn it. I need some advice.
Very, very strange. Now, and I will say this. It's quite possible Kamala Harris was completely on a fishing expedition. She had absolutely no reason to believe. But if so, she has a very good sense of where to cast. Because
she does. She actually had an. This is from now. I'm reminded she had an exchange with Sessions several months ago on a Russia hearing that was very similar. And to be fair to Sessions, that was like she definitely was getting him into, I think, a perjury charge. So he did need to be like, and he was just like, I'm not gonna like, I'm gonna be very precise. Like, and it was like, fair enough. You should be, because you literally. If anything's functioning, could be landing yourself in jail. But she's very, very good at that. Yeah.
We will find out if there is something to substantiate her asking that question. And if there is, that's going to be a little bit problematic for Kavanaugh, seems to me.
Yeah. On the Kamala Harris tip, like, I have criticized her at times that a lot of the issues I have with her are as a representative of the carceral state. And it's just like, she's a prosecutor. This is what she does. You know, she goes after people. She catches them lying. She makes them sweat. But if anybody deserves that kind of treatment, it's these people. It's these ghouls. So good for her.
Rock
it's
on.
Necessary to give them this kind of treatment. Like, I mean, they deserve it. And it's like
every Republican essential. Should be facing tribunals for like the rest of their life.
Exactly. If you're a member of this Republican Party, you should face national, local, national, and international courts and tribunals of every kind.
We will, incidentally, get to the op-ed in the Times. Don't worry about that.
Well, that's good to know that there's people on the inside who really are looking out for the country.
Exactly. This happened this morning, I believe it was, right? Cory Booker. One of the things that we keep hearing over and over again is that for some reason there are, and it is hilarious, you know, it is, I haven't watched enough cable news to know how, with how much skepticism, Chuck Grassley's claim that 80% of the documents have been, you know, handed over. Like, this is like
color scans.
Yeah. Akin to the idea that, like, I gave you 80% of the house, just not the bathroom or the kitchen. But you have 80% of the house. Why wouldn't you want to live there? Right? And the 20% of documents that have either been completely withheld from the committee, there's a lot more, I think, than 20% that's been withheld, but 20% have been listed as committee confidential. This is not a U.S. security classification. This is an internal classification. These are not classified documents in the sense that that is actually a classification of national security. They are just committee confidential. But there are Senate rules that the Senate could change at any time that say you're not supposed to hand these over. But theoretically, the reason why these are not being made public, right? Like, we had this dilemma with Leahy the other day saying, I've looked at documents that suggest maybe Brett Kavanaugh got stolen information and was aware that it was stolen from Democratic staffers' computers back in 04 or 02. And that he got it from someone who was referred under a criminal complaint to the DOJ. But I can't show Kavanaugh the email, and I can't show the public the email because you have said that they are committee confidential. And presumably these documents are committee confidential because releasing them would in some way compromise U.S. security, some other precept, I guess, that the Senate Judiciary Committee ostensibly is supposed to be protecting. Well, Cory Booker basically is calling their bluff. And this is a pretty, again, not necessarily the biggest Cory Booker fan, but you have to give props. This is what this committee work, this is what it's about. When you've got no authority beyond your ability to sort of leverage things, this is what you've got to do.
Senate rule accounts for Bill Burke's partisan review of the documents. No Senate rule and no history of the Senate accounts for what is going on right now. This partisan operative following his involvement in this process that I think, in my opinion, undermined the process. And the idea that we could somehow go through your lengthy process when these documents are, many of these documents are dumped us in the last minute, but to Senator Cornyn actually made a very good point. I knowingly violated the rules that were put forth, and I'm told that the committee confidential rules have knowing consequences. And so, sir, I come from a long line, as all of us do as Americans, and understand what that kind of civil disobedience is, and I understand the consequences. So I am right now, before your process is finished, I'm going to release the email about racial profiling, and I understand that the penalty comes with potential ousting from the Senate. And if Senator Cornyn believes that I violated Senate rules, I openly invite and accept the consequences of my team releasing that email right now. And I'm releasing it to expose that, number one, the emails that are being withheld from the public have nothing to do with national security, nothing to jeopardize the sanctity of those ideals that I hold dear. Instead, what I'm releasing this document right now to show, sir, is that we have a process here for a person, the highest office in the land, for a lifetime appointment. We're rushing through this before me and my colleagues can even read and digest the information.
Can I ask you how long you're going to say the same thing three or four times?
No, sir.
I'm saying
I'm knowingly violating the rules.
Okay.
Senator Cornyn has called me out for it.
How many times do you learn to tell us,
sir? I'm saying right now that I'm releasing committee confidential
documents. Mr. Chairman, since the senator invoked my name, I insist on an opportunity to respond.
Now,
I did not mention his name,
okay,
but he had mentioned my name, and he's right. Running for president is no excuse for violating the rules of the Senate or of the confidentiality of the documents that we are privy to. This is no different from the senator deciding to release classified information that is deemed classified by the executive branch because you happen to disagree with the class.
It is exactly different than that. That is why there are different classifications. Releasing classified information is a far greater offense. You may be able to be kicked out of the Senate, but you can't be tried for releasing that information. And the reason is because it is not as serious of a classification. That's the reason why.
Because you happen to disagree with the classification decision. That is irresponsible and outrageous. And I hope that the senator will reconsider his decision because no senator deserves to sit on this committee or serve in the Senate, in my view, if they decide to be a law unto themselves and willingly flout the rules of the Senate and the determination of confidentiality and classification. That is irresponsible and conduct unbecoming a senator.
Yeah, I mean, I think the argument that that Booker makes up front is you have already delegitimized this process, so it's all open. And he's also basically saying to Cornyn and the rest of them, you want to throw me out of the Senate? You might as well also have me take the oath of office and plan my inauguration, because if you throw me out of the Senate for releasing this email about racial profiling,
I've been doing creative visualization exercises. Right. Ryan, President in 2020. There's exactly. A lot of different scenarios. What you do is you set the intention, but you can't control the outcome.
Right.
I didn't picture it with a crusty, old, racist, grouchy bastard kicking me out of the Senate for an unexpectedly courageous move that I would do, but I am absolutely willing. If that's what it takes for me to become president, I would literally kill my own mother. So getting kicked out of the Senate, which is frankly pretty boring and disgusting anyway, is totally going
to
work for me.
If you would like to give me a great reason to spend the next 26 months unencumbered by my position as a senator, but with a huge national platform,
I will still get
opportunity to raise money.
I will blow Michael Avenatti out of the water.
Yeah, yes. Michael Avenatti, you'll never hear from again. I'll still get Bristol Myers Squibb donations. Kamala, you're doing a great job, but this is the next level. So please, I'm actually begging you. Could you move the motion forward to expel me from the Senate? Thank
yes,
you.
Exactly. But, you know, look, you got to hand it to him.
That was great.
This is exactly the type of thing. He has put them in a lose-lose situation. And here's the other problem they have. Like, if Booker gets away with releasing one of these emails, like, what's to stop Leahy from going, well, I'm tired. I think I could go for a break.
I think I could go for a leak in both senses.
Exactly. So here's all of it.
Yeah, here's everything.
Yeah.
Well, I think what was weird.
What are you going to do? Expel all the senators on that committee?
I wouldn't put it past them, actually. But I think it's actually great, though, when you do see, like, the center right, which I would just by an objective standard essentially consider Cory Booker and Kamala Harris to be like the more third way Democrats. Like, the two arguments are always ideology and competence. And the great failing of Hillary Clinton was we already knew her ideology was bad in a broad sense on most important issues, but the incredible failure of competence in terms of like political
politics,
combat.
Right.
And Cory Booker and Kamala Harris are showing that they're really good at that. And I'm glad, because the reality is that there is still a broad, you know, at least in electoral terms, it's a broad coalition at this point. It includes people in the center, and I want them to be able to win and
right.
defeat Republicans. And
right.
I'm glad to see that.
Right. I mean, it's that it's just a good play by Booker there. I mean, it was impressive.
It's always a balance, right? The more time they spend fighting the right and not the left, that's going to be good for us.
Harris right. also had, and this is relevant because the Times came out today, speaking of people leaking some of these documents, as a White House lawyer in the Bush administration, Kavanaugh challenged the accuracy of deeming the Supreme Court's landmark Roe v. Wade abortion rights decision to be settled law of the land. Now, remember, we have heard from Susan Collins that I met with Judge Kavanaugh, and he told me Roe v. Wade is settled law of the land. Now, there is nothing that has happened in the past 15 years that has strengthened the precedent of Roe v. Wade. To the extent that there have been cases that have touched upon Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court, it has continually been undermined to some degree or another. So in March 2003, Brett Kavanaugh writes an email. He was going over draft opinion piece that supporters of one of George Bush's appeals court nominees had written with the hopes that they could get anti-abortion women to submit under their names to the committee. Committee accepts different letters of recommendation, essentially. They wanted a group of women who are anti-abortion to submit a letter. They had written it out. This supporter of this judge had written the piece. And Kavanaugh writes, responding to this statement that was written by the op-ed writer. It is widely accepted by legal scholars across the board that Roe v. Wade and its progeny are settled law of the land. Well, Kavanaugh said, wrote back as he's looking this over, I'm not sure that all legal scholars refer to Roe as settled law of the land at the Supreme Court level, since the court can always overrule its precedent. And three current justices on the court would do so. Well, that number is now four. And nothing has changed in Brett Kavanaugh's perception of the Supreme Court's ability to do that. So it would be impossible for him to truthfully tell anybody Roe v. Wade is settled law of the land, because 15 years ago, when there was actually 25% less judges on the court who didn't think it was settled law of the land, he felt that it wasn't possible to even say that. So this is a real problem for Susan Collins, or should be. And here is, and I should say, this is documents that were leaked from the committee. It was among several documents that an unknown person provided to the New York Times late Wednesday. Who knows? Who did it? Here is Kamala Harris asking Judge Brett Kavanaugh, you're okay with this legislation, with the potential of legislation that inhibits how a woman could use her own body. Do you think there's an analog for the male body?
question and we can move on. Can you think of any laws that give government the power to make decisions about the male body?
I'm happy to answer a more specific question.
Male versus female.
There are medical procedures.
That the government has the power to make a decision about a man's body?
I thought you were asking about medical procedures that are unique to men.
I'll repeat the question. Can you think of any laws?
Pause. You know, I got to say, Brett Kavanaugh really seems to have trouble with the English language.
I just don't get it. I need more precision. I'm almost surprised he didn't just totally veer off in a completely disingenuous direction and be like, well, I mean, men can't use certain drugs or other substances. We regulate how both men and women use their bodies all the time.
That's right.
In a variety of ways.
Well, that's the other thing that I think is quite clear from this. This guy is, he may be an incredible partisan. He may be hew to a very narrow perspective of how one should interpret law, but this guy's not exactly, this guy's no Alito, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Or even a Gorsuch.
Yeah.
Fact that we can think of better answers to the questions than he's giving is not good.
Are we sure, though, that he was aware this was happening this week? Because I got to say, I mean,
that, like, dog ate my homework.
To be fair, there was a lot of stuff like Mila's got to apply to high schools, and there was a lot of stuff I thought was going to happen.
A lot of carpool shit.
Yeah, he had a lot of carpool obligations.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
I'll repeat the question. Can you think of any laws that give the government the power to make decisions about the male body?
I'm not thinking of any right now, Senator.
Hmm. There you go. I mean, I guess he could have said, like, well, there's anti-sodomy laws.
That's what I mean. I mean, literally, you go with drugs, you go with sex, you go, I mean, there's
can't use your body to murder someone.
But that's exactly what, I mean, I'm saying this from literally taking, like, two pre-law classes at a good liberal arts college, right? Like, they train you in that type of evasive, actually, thought experiment thinking, right? Like, you just, well, I mean, what do you mean by regulate a body? Some wouldn't accept that it's just a woman's body. Some would say there's another body. There's so many different ways you could spin that. That's extraordinary.
Stop helping him.
I'm not patched into Kavanaugh.
All right.
Meanwhile, the other operative issue for Brett Kavanaugh is that he has a to the extent that we are allowed to know, a fairly extensive on the record sense that a president cannot be subpoenaed. He also has a record of knowing that perhaps maybe you shouldn't even charge a president while he's in office. We also know that he has refused to opine on any of this. Now, the idea that maybe he spoke to someone at Donald Trump's personal law firm, and even if he was unaware of it, seems to be a little bit problematic. But the question of Brett Kavanaugh, and remember, this is one of those guys who was not on the original list that Donald Trump presented when he was a candidate from the Heritage Foundation. He was added. He was added about a year ago. And that's interesting because this guy has a record that would suggest he does not think a president should be burdened by any criminal cases. So, and there's a lot of people who think that no judge appointed by Donald Trump, and it makes sense on some level, right? Should be adjudicating any cases that are brought against him. And so Richard Blumenthal, former attorney general from the state of Connecticut, asked Kavanaugh this question.
I would like your commitment that you will recuse yourself if there is an issue involving his criminal or civil liability.
Pause it.
Coming before.
His meaning President Trump's.
Criminal or civil liability coming before the United States Supreme Court. In other words, will you take yourself out of ruling right. on any of the issues involving his personal criminal or civil liability?
Senator, one of the core principles I've articulated here is the independence of the judiciary, which I know you care about deeply, too, and I think undergirds some of your comments yesterday. And the independence of the judiciary is critical to the confidence of the American people in the judiciary and to the rule of law in the United States.
Pause it. So what Brett Kavanaugh believes is that it is critical that the citizenry perceive the judiciary as independent from politics, independent from the person that appoints them. And it's critical that the citizenry perceive it that way. Never mind, like, we don't know what the reality is, but perceive it that way. So of course, in an abundance of caution and in total deference to the principle I've just articulated, Brett Kavanaugh will now say, so yes, of course I would recuse myself, because anything else would add the appearance of a potential of the judiciary not being independent.
That's right,
right? That's what he's going to say, right? Of course.
Appearance.
All in the United States. But one key facet of independence of the judiciary, as I've studied the history of nominees, is not to make commitments on particular cases.
I'm not asking for a particular commitment, and I'm going to take your answer as a no. It's really a yes or no question. You will not commit to recuse yourself. You will not commit to take yourself out of that decision, despite the unique circumstances of your nomination.
Senator, I think to be consistent with the principle of independence of the judiciary, I should not and may not make a commitment about how I would handle a particular case. And the decision to participate in a case is itself a decision in a particular case. And therefore, following the precedent set by all the nominees before me, I need to be careful. And again,
understand, no one is asking him about a particular case. No one's saying, hey, if there is a case of conspiracy to defraud the United States, would you recuse yourself? Or if there is a case involving obstruction, would you recuse yourself? Or if there's a case involving a lawsuit brought by women who have who feel they have been defamed by Donald Trump, would you recuse yourself? Or if there's a criminal complaint that he assaulted a woman, would you recuse yourself? That would be a particular case. Blumenthal is asking about a particular person. Would you recuse yourself based upon the circumstances of your appointment? Would you recuse yourself from any case, not a particular case, any case that involves the president? And Brett Kavanaugh would have us believe that to ensure the independence or the perception of independence, that he can't make a commitment to Congress, that somehow that ensures the perception of independence, even though everyone with half a brain knows that if you want to ensure the perception of independence, certainly you would have to prove it from the person who hired you for that job that you will not sit and judge that guy.
You're speaking pretty fast right now.
They just don't care.
They just don't care.
Also, somebody just pointed it out to me in the chat that he sounds like Joe Rogan, and now I cannot unhear it.
Let's check that
finish
out.
this clip here.
By all the nominees before me, I need to be careful. And again, you may disagree with this, but this is part of what I see as independence of the judiciary.
Well, I do disagree, and I am troubled and disturbed by your refusal to say that you will take yourself out of that kind of case.
I mean, that's pretty stunning. Blumenthal could have followed up a little bit more on that.
What did Kagan had to recuse herself from the Obamacare?
Well, decision? She recused herself from many cases as because she was Solicitor General.
Obama's Solicitor General.
She had worked on these cases as Solicitor right. General. That has happened. There's plenty of times where Supreme Court justices have recused themselves. This is a fairly unique situation in that there is an ongoing investigation with a clear possibility, one could argue probability, that some issue involving that investigation, whether it's the question of whether a president can be subpoenaed, whether it's whatever it is, could come in front of this court. And you don't need to know the particulars of that case to simply know that, like, do you feel like it's legitimate? Do you feel like you're upholding that key core principle you've stated that the judiciary must be perceived as being independent? Can you do that unless you commit now to not adjudicating any of those cases?
Yeah, as the president himself has said, it would be a little weird when somebody does you a solid, like getting a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, to then not rule in their favor and help them get away with all of the multiple crimes that they have and continue to commit, Senator. So I hear where you're coming from, but I think we have... Actually, it is fun to rogue
he
Kavanaugh.
Should be just be going,
I think we have a legit disagreement on this.
Couldn't it? He could also have just gone like... Just when you said that, like, Kasowitz, I just noticed that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm seeing a pattern here.
Kasowitz, that's the name of the lawyer, and then it's like Case, and I don't know if anybody else noticed.
And I don't know if you two are coordinating, but
all right, let's just play this last clip.
But white power, fuck it, I'm getting confirmed, doesn't matter. See you at the vote.
All right, one more Booker questions Brett Kavanaugh on Antonin Scalia's belief of race and constitutionality. Remember, Antonin Scalia famously suggested that the reason why it was appropriate for the court to gut the Voting Rights Act by essentially hamstringing Section 5, which is the preclearance part of the Voting Rights Act. 13 of 14 states, or not entire states, but including some of their counties, including Queens, part of Queens. So it's not just southern states, were required by the Voting Rights Act to get permission from the Justice Department to change their voting rules because they had a history of changing voting rules to discriminate against minorities in this country. The Voting Rights Act was almost unanimously reauthorized by the Senate in 2007. When this case came in front of the Supreme Court, I believe it was in 2011, Antonin Scalia said the reason why, remember, this is the guy who defers, no judicial activism, right? We defer to the legislator. The reason why they voted to reauthorize this is because they were afraid to not reauthorize it because it's such a hot button issue. That's why we're going to gut it. That was one of Antonin Scalia's perspectives on race and how it measured up with his notion of non-judicial activism.
Well, letting black people vote is so divisive.
It can be. It certainly could probably lead to polarization, without a doubt. Here is Cory Booker pressing Kavanaugh on Antonin Scalia's other belief that it is never permissible for government to use race to try and remediate past discrimination, to try and achieve justice, right? So, in other words, if a racial group has been subjugated historically in this country, you cannot use race in trying to mitigate that injustice.
Yeah, it'd be racist.
It would be totally racist. Like, we're not supposed to see race now to fix a time when people saw race. So, but here is Booker asking Kavanaugh about that.
Are you saying that you do not share Justice Scalia's beliefs about this idea that people who are seeking to address past discrimination, past harms, that they are seeking racial entitlement?
I think, first of all, the Supreme Court precedent allows race-conscious programs in certain circumstances. So the precedent on the Supreme Court, as you know, Senator, is different. I was writing a brief trying to cite all the, you know, principles from the different cases that would support the brief. But to your point, there's when you're trying to remedy past discrimination as a general proposition, you're seeking racial equality and seeking to remedy both past discrimination and the lingering effects.
So you disagree with Scalia that he says it's never permissible for the government to use race to try to remediate past discrimination to try to achieve justice. You disagree with Scalia?
The Supreme Court law.
I know what the precedent is. I know what the law is. I'm asking what you believe. Do you agree with Scalia that, again, that it is never permissible for government to use race to try to remediate past discrimination to try to achieve justice, that that's racial entitlement?
That position has never been adopted by
the asking what you believe, sir, not the Supreme Court.
Okay. The term I used was that what you're seeking is equality, equal and what.
And right. So if you're seeking equality, I appreciate you grant that. Is it never permissible for government to use race to remediate past discrimination?
There are a couple of things that the Supreme Court's pointed out in its case law.
And again, I know the Supreme Court case law. Maybe I can approach this in a different way.
Okay.
The aftermath of Katrina. In a case brought by plaintiffs in New Orleans who challenged the way government provided grants to homeowners as having a discriminatory impact on African Americans, you joined the minority in denying them a relief. If the findings had shown that the grant program systematically disfavored African Americans, would a government effort that uses race to remedy that disparity be unconstitutional? In other words, do you believe that all such efforts that the government using those efforts amount to what Scalia called a racial entitlement? I'm trying to figure out if you agree with that point that Scalia is making.
Senator, first of all, I approach questions like you are asking with a recognition of two things. One, the history of our country, and two, the real world today.
Yes.
And I try as best I can to understand both the history of our country on that issue and the real world today. So I'm coming at it from that perspective. You're asking a question, I think, about specific remedies for discrimination, and there's a lot. I'm a judge, as you know, and so I have to follow precedent, and the precedent allows remedies in certain circumstances.
And again, sir, I've heard you use that with a lot of my colleagues, and I know what precedents are, especially dealing with a lot of very important Supreme Court issues. I'm asking about your opinions because your opinions matter, what you've saved matter.
Yes, he won't answer that question, which is odd.
That delineation between I'm trying to understand the history, but and also the, quote, real world today. As if there's some huge, like, divide
line between
history.
Well, history is really far away. And in today's world, there's a thing, Senator, it's called reverse racism.
All right, wait, let me just be explicit here with one thing. Scalia said you could never, ever, ever, never, ever, ever contemplate redressing or addressing or providing redress for a clear racial violation. You can't contemplate using race to fix it. And that if you do, it becomes a special racial entitlement. That you're giving them a special, that group, that racial group, a special benefit. Even if it is to provide essentially justice, which, you know, we do all the time, right? Like, hey, you took your you lit a firework off in your front yard, and it landed on my house, and it burned my house down. And I'm suing you. I'm suing you for the cost of my house. Nobody would ever contemplate, like, ooh, the guy won. He's getting a special entitlement to build his house again. That is what the perspective of Scalia was. And it would be simply, it would be, seems to me, even for someone who's got dubious advisors sitting behind him at different times, to be able to say, like, I would never say never.
Right? Like, if you agree with Scalia on that, you're racist. And the fact that he can't even say no and leave the door open for some, like, oh, well, it's not because of that. Like, it's because of this. Like, it might be appropriate in some scenarios, but not in this one. Like, that's bad.
Yes.
Well, as we all
and
know.
He doesn't give a he just doesn't give a shit. No. Like, these people know they have the power. They're going to get him through no matter what happens.
Or he knows if he says, I would never say never, which, of course, is no commitment. Right. I mean, it's virtually no commitment. He's afraid that Senator Cornyn will say, well, what are you saying, Senator?
Hold on one second. I was just shredding some documents over here.
I was just I was just shredding the employment documents for Zena Bash that I have because she used to be on my staff.
Yeah, right. I was just deleting Miss Bash's swastikas in the office.
Her
search history. Excuse you. It sounded to me that you were living a crack in the door for some type of bare minimum of racial justice there. And I got to tell you, if that's the case, it's going to put a completely different spin.
It's a bunch of different hue on you, if you understand what I'm saying.
We're going to give Kamala Harris 5 more minutes with
you.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or no, you know, Kavanaugh's
just
like...
It's a different hue lover on you.
Kavanaugh's like, it's super complicated question, and there's a lot of history to it, but there's also
real
present
stuff.
Reality and real stuff, as well as the person who nominated me.
Well, Senator Booker, as we say, I would never say never. Why am I holding up my hand like that? What do you mean? All right, we got to take a break.
I have vacationed in Latin America. That is atrocious to imply.
My grandfather, my maternal grandfather was Irish.
I also love how, like, people say, oh, she has a part Mexican background. Like, you know what's super exculpatory is definitely the idea of saying you're, because Latin America is totally free of white supremacy.
Oh my God. That's
absolutely a place where racial hierarchies have had no effect right, on their politics.
Of course.
None whatsoever. I mean, you go to Mexico or Brazil. It's just free of that.
Well, if you're an immigrant, I mean, in any way, like, for instance, if you have, let's say, German lineage, how could you possibly be in any way like that?
That's a great question.
All right. Look, we've gone too far. We haven't gone too far. We've gone too long. So we're going to take a break, head into the fun half. Just a reminder, you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Literally nickels a day to support this program that you may listen to 2 times a week, 3 times a week, 4 times a week, some 5 times a week. Become a member. Get access to the other content. So when we have a dry, boring interview that you think is dry and boring, you just listen to the fun half.
Get to it.
Also, you get full access to the archives on our, which has been new and improved on the iOS app and on the Android app, fully searchable. So check it out. You can pick up the app at majorityapp.com. Also, just coffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Today is Thursday, which means yesterday was Wednesday, which means the day before that was Tuesday. That was the night that the Michael Brooks show happened. Is that correct, Michael?
Indeed. And it was a great show. As I said, we deployed some new segments. Ken Klippenstein on why facts won't set us free. We forgot John McCain. This Sunday, Illicit History Primer on a deep dive on Lula da Silva, the Workers' Party, the democracy crisis in Brazil, lessons for our world. And later this month, Alona Minkowski is coming back. Michael Arsenault is coming on. Matt Taibbi is coming back. And, of course, every week is also for patrons. Is
any
also
senator, officer, or employee of the Senate who shall...
Also that guy.
Oh, what the heck?
Is this is that
sorry,
on mic
me.
Or is
no,
that on?
Oh,
okay, no problem. Woke Bros with Waz. So yeah, patreon.com/TMBS. Also, I really would say, especially the post game, but all the show that we did with Sam was very good. I think actually for even understanding some of the context for this hearings, and unfortunately, we're going to have to do more deep dives into things like the '90s. To understand what's going on. And also you could check out our YouTube channel where we have regular clips coming up.
Those clips
well.
Are actually going up. So
yeah, those clips are on the regular. So get over there, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. And we're just shy of our first 7,000 subscribers there.
Jamie.
All right. So after a bit of a delay, we released not one, but two interview segments today. I did an interview with a singer from a great punk band called Hit Bargain about punk rock, bodily fluids, situationism, all that good stuff. Andy did an interview with the people who run a place called Woodbine Space in Queens. I thought he was doing something on the prison strike, but I guess that got delayed. But yeah, they're both great. Check them out. And Sean's dropping a hot solo track as well. I think tomorrow, about the immortal science of historical materialism. So get psyched.
And Matt?
Yep, Literary Hangover. We did an episode on a book called The Barbarous Years, about sort of 1600 to 1675 on the Eastern Seaboard, sort of class of civilization stuff.
Clash right, of folks, civilizations.
See you in the fun half.